What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment. Sports entertainment. Sports entertainment.
This is the last professional broadcaster, Sam Roberts, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil Rea and Choppy on Rant EM Radio.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of The Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Yo, what's up, kids? Thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you very much. The Turnbuckle Throwbacks, really appreciate that. But there's more ways you could support us and help us out. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, leave a review. The more reviews we get, the better we get as a crew. More listeners means more fun, means more stuff to do, right? Simple as that. Go to rantemradio.com, go to shiningwizardsnetwork.com, and go to turnbucklethrowbacks.com and get all of our other content, back content, other shows that we support. It's all there. Go get it. It's all for you. You want to buy a t-shirt? Please buy a t-shirt. It supports us. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbucklethrowbacks and get one of four designs. You won't be disappointed. They're pretty fresh to death. More importantly, thank you so much for supporting Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We appreciate it. We love you all. Peace out.
I am the baddest dude that walks the streets today.
I'm gonna end your career once and for all, right here in Madison Square Garden.
I knew that I just had to go down and give her the thrill of a lifetime, the rude awakening.
The last thing I want to do is to own the damn WWF, because that's got to be the biggest headache in the world.
Get used to it. Who you're looking at, the man. Woo!
It's time to crank your headphones and forget your problems. You're listening to an action-packed episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
Ooh, yeah.
Dirty, sexy, slinky thing. Power over all with the love you bring. Spinning from your mind control. Shuffling around.
Something for you.
Oh, Adam Cole, baby!
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Throwbackers of all ages.
No, not after what you did last week.
Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. We be the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the blue collar scholar, the heavyweight primate, the impact player, Mr. Philip G. Rea. And I'm joined by...
It is Choppy, baby.
Choppy, baby. Choppy, baby.
Oh, my God. What a week of wrestling.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. We only got like a half hour to get the news in.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, I could play this whole day.
Dude, this song's great.
Anyway. All right. So, listen, I apologize for the... it's not really an echo. It's a big room, and there's nothing in it yet. So we're moving in a couple of weeks, hopefully, and hopefully I can fix it. But I mean, as long as you can hear me and Choppy, it's really all I care about.
Because we got something for you,
baby.
Oh man.
Well, listen. in about less than 30 minutes, we're going to have a very special guest calling in. My other brother from another mother, Mr. Kevin Castle, is calling in.
Yeah!
Talking SummerSlam 97.
Can't wait.
So we'll get all the news out of the way. I may not take a break tonight, depending on how long Kevin stays on the phone with us.
Correct.
I don't know what's going to go down. He's a busy dude, so we'll see what happens. Want to say hello to everybody in the chat room. I got Mr. X chiming in on the cellophone.
On the cellophone?
Yeah, Shaylin. There's a bunch of people. Anonymous.
Yes. Hey, Shaylin. Logan's great. Brielle's great. I'm great. Phil is just tremendous.
I'm tremendous. Tremendous. Thank you.
That's what I'm here for.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I think we all are.
I went to, for the first time ever, I went to Great Adventure. Ooh. With the boy. The boy calls me last night. Now, my stepson is a veteran of roller coasters and rides. Yeah. He's a thrill seeker. Calls me last night. He's like, Phil, will you come to Great Adventure with me tomorrow? And I was like, oh, buddy, you know Phil doesn't do rides. He gets like nauseous and car sick, right? Motion sickness. He's like, yeah, but just come with me and try one. Just one. Like, what am I going to do? Tell him no?
Did he give you those puppy dog eyes?
Well, he was on the phone.
Oh, okay.
So I was on my way home from work. And he was like, Phil, please. And I was like, all right. So,
I mean, you did get to go to the Hall of Justice of all places. I mean, come on.
I did. And I wanted to meet Ted Knight. Meanwhile,
back at the...
Okay, Pookie. Mary. Oh, yo, Ted man. Knight was the shit, dude.
He was.
How'd you like to mow my lawn, So I went on one ride. And got as soon as I got to the park, I went on Skull Mountain, and it was all in the dark.
Right? Yeah, that's what it is. Yep.
So it was me, him, and his dad. And his dad goes, "Here, sit with Mike. I'll sit behind you." I'm like, "All right." So the ride is like, I'm closed in, and I'm going, and we're going like 70 miles an hour, and I'm like, and I'm like, my eyes are closed because I know if I open my eyes. That's the thing. I think it's the motion because I can't even play one shooter games without getting like nauseous.
Yeah,
it's my eyes can't take it when it goes too fast. So I said to him, I was like, "Is this thing all in the dark?" He goes, "Yeah." Are you scared? I'm like, "No, I'm not scared. I just don't feel well." You know, it's like my mind is like, "Yeah, go on, Superman and Green Lantern and fucking Joker, right?" But then your body's like, "No, fatty, you can't take that." So,
remember Batman and Robin the Chiller?
Yeah.
That was my very first roller coaster of all time.
Yeah, I went on.
What a disaster.
I went to Six Flags, not Great Adventure, in Maryland in like 2001. And I went on a Joker's Jinx.
Oh, fuck that.
And it was like, it was crazy. And then I went on Superman, mm-mm, which you're basically flying.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was Superman. That was the same ride today. I knew about that ride. And I was like, I ain't fucking with that either. And then they had some other shit, like, you know, there's a bunch of guys. But there was, you know, all the swag, all the superhero swag was there.
Of course, that's the whole reason you should have gone.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they have the park navigated. Like, we didn't do circles, we ended up at the beginning, like, they knew where all the fucking food spots were, where all the cigarette spots were, where all the restrooms were. Like, they covered it. They've been there, like, 8 times this year. They're season pass holders. So, I was happy with that. And needless to say, it was a fun day. I'm just exhausted because I got up really early this morning.
Look who's in the room.
Is that Pastor?
It's Pastor Sadell.
Oh, man.
Pardon your tardiness. Don't worry about that, my friend. How you doing?
Yeah, how you doing? Let me see. Let me play Jesus for Pastor.
Yeah, please.
Jesus!
Welcome, my friend.
Yeah, man. Welcome. Thank you. So I'm wearing my Dusty Third today.
Oh, Dusty Rhodes, baby. And I got my macho man, Randy Savage. Yeah.
That wasn't planned.
You like this hat?
Sure do.
You better like this hat. That's no lie.
That's right. Who would have thought? You wearing your favorite wrestler of all time t-shirt and me wearing my... T-shirt, my favorite wrestler.
I had a Justice League shirt on. It said Beast on it with all the Justice League guys inside the B and the E and the A and the S and the T.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, it was just I bought a change of clothes so I could make sure I was comfortable for tonight, because I was in these walking around all day sweaty, and it wasn't it was the perfect day though. I mean,
weather wise it was good.
It was amazing. It was
a beautiful day.
So in the shade it was like breezy and really good weather we're getting in the Northeast the next couple of days, but not so much good weather in Texas and the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, it's bad.
With that hurricane. So whoever's listening in live or on the download, please, you know, I hope you're buckling down. I hope you're taking care of yourself. I know people in Texas like Sugar Shane and some other people. I hope you guys are holding it down out there.
I know
there.
Two people that moved from Brooklyn to Texas.
My man Randy, I got to check on my our boy Dooch. I have to check in on him. I have to check in on Sugar Shane. I just spoke to Sugar Shane the other day, but I haven't spoken to him since the weather. So I hope everybody's holding it down.
Yeah, please.
So, so that's pretty much where I've been. I mean, making some power moves. We talked about that in pre-production. Hopefully that works out. But I went to the Hall of Justice. I did go to the Hall of Justice today.
And you saw the Legion of Doom there, too.
That was a ride, but the ride was like an hour and 45-minute wait.
What?
It was a Justice ride, like a virtual reality type thing.
Oh, good God.
So I said, can we just take a picture in front of the building, and I'll go get some swag? He's like, yeah, sure. So, we had a really good time, Mikey's dad and myself and the Hammer. You know, Hammer was like, he goes, thank you for coming today, he says. I was like, you're welcome. Yeah. he's cute. Thank you very much for coming today. It's not like Saul Rosenberg from the Jerky Boys. So, anyway, we got some wrestling talk.
And talk about wrestling?
No, that's another show.
I'm sorry.
It's another show.
I'm joking.
Okay, terrific.
I'm sure the Wizards would love that one.
Oh, yeah. Those fucking guys. Matt and Kevin were at SmackDown.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because Tony was doing the show in Manhattan, because he was walking around Manhattan talking and doing this show.
Yeah, and of course, Aiden English, Aiden English is doing his little spiel.
Yes.
And I'm sitting there, and I normally I'm not home that time.
Correct.
I'm not home, and I told wifey, I'm like, something's going to happen.
Yep.
I said, hit the music, I said to her. And she goes, what? And I said, I fucking knew it.
Yep.
I knew it.
You called it.
I knew it. Pastor should play this before his sermon.
Seriously. But you want to know something? I was shocked.
No.
Not shocked as in, like, not the fact that he debuted. Shocked that he debuted as a babyface.
Yeah.
That shocked me.
Yeah, I don't think that'll work itself out. That'll definitely work. I thought when AJ did the open challenge.
Yes. Yes!
Mikey's dad was like, I thought Bobby Roode was coming out then. I'm like, no, when Aiden English came out, I said, yeah.
Could you imagine if Bobby Roode had gone up against AJ?
I instantaneously texted you. I was like, I fucking called it.
Cool.
Yeah, SmackDown was fun. What did you... All right, well, you want to cover NXT?
Yeah, let's cover NXT. That was a great show, man. We both saw it at my house last Saturday.
Yeah, that was fun.
And let me tell you something. The whole show... From bottom of the card all the way to the main event, was just 5-star quality. First off, first match was Johnny Wrestling, Johnny Gargano versus Cien Almas.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something. Those fucking two.
Say his name again.
Cien Almas. Andrade Cien Almas. With his slut of a valet. What's her name in NXT?
El Skanko Gigante?
There you go. El Skanko Gigante.
Terrific.
Azúcar con leche.
What do you know? We got a couple of haters.
Dude, those two killed the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
And then I had my friend Frank over the house, and he hasn't seen wrestling in a while.
Yeah.
And I introduced him to NXT that night.
Yes.
He's like, bro, they're fucking killing each other, man. See?
What was the next match?
Next match. Man, it's AOP versus Sandy.
AOP had great chemistry with Sanity.
Dude, they made Sanity work, bro. They fucking destroyed each other. And then your girl Nikki Cross got involved too, which was one of the spots of the night right there.
Next time she do that spot topless, I'm just saying.
She got some tingle bitties.
Fuck it.
But yeah, they lost the straps finally.
Yeah, now they're definitely going up to the main roster eventually.
Imagine.
But then what happened after the match? Tell them.
They all got attacked by Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish.
And who are those two gentlemen?
That's Red Dragon.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they're going to use that name. Right?
I don't think so either. But something tells me. Well, didn't they? What was the name of their finisher?
Chasing the Dragon.
I think they called it Chasing
the Dragon. Nigel McGuinness.
Nigel McGuinness called it Chasing the Dragon.
Hello.
Hello. You fucking wanker.
Hello, you wanker. Let me see your wanker.
You sick freak! Oh, boy. The match was very, very good, and then just the ending just was great. It was like the cherry on top for that match.
Yeah.
Next match was Azúcar con Leche.
Azúcar con Leche.
Esta noche, el sábado gigante.
Esta noche, Azúcar. Guantanamera. Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera.
So we had Asuka versus the Will Morgan's future wifey.
Oh, yeah. Ember Moon. Yeah.
And it was a great match as well. Another great match. Yeah. I was very, very shocked because I thought Ember Moon was going to take that. I really did.
So Asuka retains, and then we come to find out she broke a collarbone during the match. And she just recently on a taping of NXT relinquished her NXT championship.
Yeah.
So
it's a shame. Yeah. Good show though.
Yeah. So
next match. It was Drew McIntyre, Phil's favorite.
Yeah.
Against the NXT champion, Bobby Roode.
Yep.
What a fantastic match too.
It was good. Listen, I'm not a fan of Drew Galloway. I don't connect with him emotionally. I'm not saying he's a bad talent or anything. I made that perfectly clear last week. However, him and Bobby Roode tore it up. Bobby Roode retained. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He lost and got fucking detained.
Detained.
And rearranged.
And then Drew McIntyre holds up the belt. And who appears after the end of the match?
Red Dragon.
They distract him a little bit. And then who appears right afterwards?
Adam Cole, baby!
They destroyed the fuck out of Drew McIntyre. It was great.
Yes.
And then when the cameras were off, Adam Cole did his gimmick.
Yeah, they let the WWE let the cameras roll, and they walked down the aisle.
Yep.
And he put his hands up, and Brooklyn yelled out, "Adam Cole, baby." Shout out to, not because I'm biased, not because I was born in Brooklyn, but shout out to Brooklyn. Where Brooklyn at? They had a wonderful crowd those 4 days.
Listen, I was telling you this the last weekend. I feel like NXT Brooklyn is the WrestleMania of NXT.
Yeah,
they go all out for this particular event. They kill each other. I've never seen a bad NXT Brooklyn. I think so far these past three have been great, and they tend to be better than the SummerSlam, which again is what happened this last weekend. So.
Pastor, yes. She's probably going to debut on Raw, I think. Choppy says SmackDown.
I think SmackDown, because SmackDown is like losing a lot of... doesn't have too much talent on there.
Yeah. But NXT killed.
Killed and then mauled and destroyed any chances of SummerSlam being better. And they only had 5 matches. SummerSlam had like 25 matches. I don't even know what they were.
So we went to Rob's for SummerSlam.
Which was really nice. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, Rob crowded all of us in his living room, which was a little tight, but we got it done.
Uh-huh!
I had to yell at my kid because he kept picking on Rage. I know it's easy, but leave the kid alone.
How is it that a 10-year-old?
Because he sees everybody else doing it. He thinks it's monkey see, monkey do.
Well,
you know?
You want to know something? Well, he should. I'm joking.
Virgin.
Yeah, I love Rage. So,
oh boy, but it was SummerSlam was okay. I wasn't too impressed. I think the main event was fucking off the wall. Was it balls to the wall? Great. Honor Among Thieves, maybe?
What?
That's what Pastor just said.
That's the name of the group?
No. Honor Among Thieves, may. Oh, yeah, that could be the name of the group.
Hat. The Hat Crew.
The Hat Crew.
The Hat Posse. Get Yours Posse does not get the gas face.
I was the one name that I threw out was Rise of Honor.
Yeah.
The Rise of Honor, which in essence, it's the initials ROH.
Yeah, and you know what? Ring of Honor has a working agreement with WWE in terms of like footage and stuff like that.
And so. They also mentioned Ring of Honor during the show, which was kind of...
Nigel McGuinness.
Nigel McGuinness then mentioned ROH again.
Yes.
Fucking wanker.
You fucking wanker. Hello.
Well, he's a cunt. He's always going to be a cunt.
You're a cunt. You're a cunt.
You're a cunt.
You're a cunt. You're a cunt now. You've always been a cunt. And the only thing that's going to change is you're going to become an even bigger cunt. Maybe more cunt kids.
Oof.
Boy.
That was oof. Wow.
Yeah. So, so we went to Rob's for SummerSlam. That was fun. And we had some really good wings from Atomic Wings. That was fantastic.
Yeah, man. That place is really good.
It's a franchise. There's a bunch of them.
They might give Buffalo Wild Wings a run for their money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. So, you know, I didn't think SummerSlam was that... I give it like a C+. I mean, if I'm going to grade it, it wasn't...
It was average.
Yeah, it was average. The tag team match was fantastic.
With
the Usos and New Day.
That was good. That was good.
The Rollins and Ambrose against what's his nuts?
Oh, Cesaro and Sheamus.
That was another good match. I enjoyed that. If anything, and I'm not a Dean Ambrose guy, but if anything, they do have him and Ambrose have chemistry.
Oh, Ambrose
Rollins have chemistry. I agree with that. I agree with that.
I thought Ambrose and Rollins had a great match with the Hardy Boys on Raw.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah. What did you think of the U.S. title match, AJ and Steen, Owens?
It was good. It was okay. Yeah. I mean, these two always produce a great match, no matter what. Do I think they needed Shane in the mix? No,
nah, it just added some more flavor to it.
Yeah, I don't think they needed Shane, but it was just another extra element to the match. But it was fine. My match of the night was definitely the main event.
Yeah, what about Nakamura and Jinder My Balls?
Jinder My Balls can go suck it, dude. That match was horrible.
Yeah.
I didn't like it at all.
I was disappointed. I thought Nakamura was going to win the title.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
But I figured out the reason why he retained.
Do tell.
There's an Indian UFC fighter that's going to be fighting soon. And I think WWE wanted Jinder Mahal to walk with the WWE title with this guy down the entrance.
Yeah.
For the next UFC event with this guy.
Okay.
So that way WWE was prominently represented in the UFC event.
Okay.
But I think I do still think that he's going to lose the strap eventually to Nakamura, because it seems like they're still feuding after, you know, even after SmackDown.
So it takes us to the main event. I'm not going to go through every match because it was like fucking 12 matches.
How good was Braun Strowman?
Yeah, your boy kicked ass.
Yeah! Told you!
I didn't say he wasn't. I didn't think Brock was going to retain, man.
And I didn't think so either.
And all those great, crazy spots outside the ring with people getting driven through railings and steps being thrown. And
how about steps? What about chairs being thrown at guys?
At guys. Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, man. Like everybody in the match was significant. Like, there was not one guy didn't shine. I thought Roman Reigns did well.
Roman was fantastic.
Joe held his own.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Brock did more than 10 minutes, which is rare.
And I love the fact that they actually took Brock out of the equation for a good 20 minutes. What was it? 10 minutes of the match. Because for all the shit that Roman gets, he's a fucking good wrestler. I like Roman a lot. Rage, you heard it here. Roman is great. Even though you hate him. And then Braun Strowman, that guy was on fire at that pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And Joe was great, too. I'm sorry, Joe was fantastic as well.
Yeah, I thought Yeah, and I didn't think, and we made our boat, which was cool too. I was happy about that. Mm-hmm. Even though we got a fucking tour of the Lower East Side.
Yeah, seriously, what was that about?
Our cab driver he had that Angela Davis fro. So
no, I thought he reminded me of Morgan Freeman from Driving Miss Daisy.
Hello, I'm Morgan Freeman. Miss Daisy, lick the back of my ass, would you?
Ring that bell.
He stinks, and I don't like it.
So, what else happened that kind of...
That was basically
stuck
it.
Out? I mean, what about... what stuck out on your mind? I saw a little bit of GFW.
Yeah, I didn't... I just saw... the Taryn Terrell thing from last night.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch it in slow motion? Her tits pop out.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's pretty dope.
I mean, I've seen her tits before already.
I didn't see her tits. I saw
them. She did Playboy before.
Oh, that's good. I definitely want to see. Yeah, she did. She was. Her tits popped out. Yeah. She's had a hold of it. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Areolas are nothing special.
Nothing?
They look like little mosquito bites.
Mosquito bites, okay.
So.
Hello, gorgeous.
What do you call it? The new GFW global champion is none other than Mr. Yeah, Dummy. Yeah, Eli Drake. I love this guy.
I know the Wizards have a soundbite.
Yeah,
that.
They do.
What is that? Yeah, I wonder if it's on YouTube.
I'm sure it is. I want to get that T-shirt. Dummy. Yeah.
Hold on a minute. There it is. Oh, wait, hold on.
Where is it?
Hold on. Do it again.
Dummy! Dummy! Yeah! Yeah!
There it is.
Dummy! Dummy! Yeah! Yeah!
That guy is great, man. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, he's money, man.
And then we also had another big debut this week on TV, which was AKA John, what was it? It was John Hennigan, John Morrison, Johnny Impact, Johnny Nitro. John Mundo as well, Johnny Mundo. So we had Johnny, his new name is now Johnny Impact, and he debuted this week on GFW. If you're a fan of Johnny Mundo, he's on the show now. He's going to be on every week. He did pretty good. He got a nice little reaction from the crowd.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the rest of that. I only watched titties pop out, and then I watched it in slow motion.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I like titties.
I mean, Drew McIntyre banged that already.
That's fine. I right then and there, if you pause it, Gail Kim was chasing her, and her titties are popping out.
I think Gail Kim is a lot sexier than she is.
You think so?
I think Gail Kim has a little bit more sex appeal than Taryn Tyrell or Terrell or Taryn Galloway, whatever her name is.
Yeah. Dana Brooke's boyfriend died. He choked on food or something like that.
Yeah, that's another thing. He died. He's a bodybuilder. And then another bodybuilder died today, Rich Piana.
What's going on with those juice heads, man?
Dude, I heard that this guy went into a coma and then he had to go to the hospital and that was it for him.
Oh, God. That's terrible.
Dude, it's horrible what's going on with these bodybuilders.
Jesus!
Yeah.
Jesus.
They saw him. They saw Jesus this week, that's for sure.
Ugh.
I feel bad for Dana Brooke, man, because apparently she was with him when it happened.
Oh, no.
Yeah, dude.
I saw her tweet on Twitter. I felt bad.
Oh, dude. I tweeted her, and I was like, dude, I'm sorry for your loss, and, you know, all my thoughts and prayers to you and his family.
Thoughts and prayers over here.
Yeah.
Thoughts and prayers.
Oh, yeah!
All right, we got about 3 minutes.
We got about 3 minutes, and we got the Mr. Castle coming in soon.
So, listen, before we get into anything, I just want to give a shout out to the Midnight Jury. They had some rough time talking to Mike Norganga last night. He texted me. Apparently they got tossed off of iTunes and Stitcher. They got reported by some not so nice people they had some Twitter beef with these people, and they got them fucking, they got the whole crew banned from iTunes and Stitcher, which takes away a lot of their fucking fan base to download the shows. So just if you're friends with any of those guys from the Midnight Jury, or if you're on their on their Facebook page, show them some love. Go to WLWstudios.com. Show love to all those guys. You know them and the sports show they have with Jay Bacca, and he's part of the jury. He's part of the crew over there at WLW Studios with Handsome Dan Lopez. So
I think it's just horseshit, bro. Like the people, just why would you do that? It's terrible.
I told Mike last night, we live in a world, it's a sad, sad world. When you live in a world, you can't...
The guy is just doing something that makes him, you know, makes him happy, makes him laugh with a couple of his friends. And then a couple of jerk-offs ruined that for him. Phil, we do this for fun. This is just makes him happy.
Listen, I'm not... I you won't get an argument from me, man.
And then to do that to another show just because you get your rocks off of it? Come on, man. That's fucked up, dude.
That's what people do, man.
You know, Mike, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I'm supporting you in this little bit of a you know, whatever.
Even if you don't agree with what Mike and Adam say all the time on, you know, on Twitter or social media.
There's something called the Bill of Rights people.
Freedom of speech.
Exactly. Bill of Rights people. Exactly. If you don't have freedom of speech, what's the point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Bullshit.
I don't know.
It's like what I said last week. I'm pretty sure I offended somebody last week. And could you imagine if my comment got us kicked off of Stitcher or iTunes or whatever?
It would be a big blow because that's where a lot of our listeners get their stuff from.
Exactly.
So I don't want to be the fucking Debbie Downer, but... You know, people just don't want to see other people prosper. They want to hate, you know? It's a sad, sad world that we live in. Pardon me.
By the way, Pastor, if I ever say anything out of context or anything out of line or anything that's offensive, I will apologize on the show.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. No, it's...
And it's all in fun. Do I mean it? No. I just want to get a reaction out of people to see what they say. And that's it. It's not to, like, be malicious. Because I'm not a malicious guy. Phil's known me for, like, what, 3-4 years now?
Yeah.
Sometimes I can be a fucking asshole, but I'm not a dick. I mean,
either way, let's support the Midnight Jury.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to their Twitter. Go to their
spread the word about this show, man. They got a really good show, really good crew.
Yeah,
Mike, Adam,
Sydney, Cal,
Dan
Lopez, Jay, all those guys. So we love you. We're thinking about you.
Absolutely, guys.
And we're gonna hook up soon. They're in Philly still.
Oh, I thought they were...
They didn't get to Jersey yet.
Oh, dude, if they once they go to Jersey, it's on.
Yeah, I know.
So, on like Donkey Kong.
Ready to make this phone call?
Yeah! All
right, let's do it. Let's see if it goes. Ding, 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 ding. What's up, Booker Man? Kev? Hello?
Hey, Kev.
Kev, you there?
Hey, Kev.
Says he's on.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't hear him.
Oh, Jesus.
Gotta love Skype.
I fucking hate Skype.
No, stop.
I do.
It's a great product. What are you talking about? Let's try this again, people.
This is gonna be the death of me. You know that, right?
Oh.
Skype was working all fucking night. You saw me playing with it before.
I know.
Hold on. Let's do a test call.
I love you, Skype. Please work, Skype.
Hello. Welcome to Skype. Hello.
You're a wanker.
Hello. Hello. There he is.
There he is.
There he is. Good evening, Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Hello.
Hey, Kev? No, come on.
You guys hear me now?
Yeah. There he is.
There he is.
All right. Sorry about that.
Woo!
What's up, buddy?
Sorry, I had a little technical problem there.
It's okay.
Kevin Castle from Don Tony. Kevin Castle joining us. How are you, sir?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. We're holding it down.
Oh, you've been on already, right? What did you start at 9?
Yeah, we started at 9. We figured we'd just a half hour go over the current stuff. It doesn't take us very long anyway, so.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay, cool, man. I'm glad to be on.
What, So before we get into anything, for the people who don't know, I met Kevin, I want to say, a little over 20 years ago. I was in a little band, and Kev was booking for a certain club that we played in Queens. And on the same night that Raw Nitro were on, Kevin was booking shows, and I would be the guy for my band that would book all this, you know, book all our stuff. So Kev would call me, and we booked the show, and then spend the next 2 hours talking on the phone, talking about wrestling. And that's basically how it started, man. And we became good friends, and here we are 20 years later.
Yeah, no, I think it's actually more than... It might be like 22 years, 22, like 95, maybe, 96?
95, 96. It was definitely right when Nitro was picking up steam.
Yeah.
So, right after 95, so...
Yeah, no, I remember No, it was a good times, man. It seems like a lifetime ago. I mean, when you look back, John the Doorman has all pictures, and you look back, you don't even recognize any of them. I mean, you can, but it's so long ago. It's like it's unbelievable. It's not, you know, 2 decades ago, literally. You know, so it was good times, though. Those were fun times.
Yeah, we had a crew. We had a steady crew of bands and you know, guys and girls that would hang out and do the circuit. You know, yeah. And there was about 10 or 20 of us that were wrestling fans. So every time we'd go to the show, one of us had a T-shirt or you know, who had a videotape or who saw this, who saw that. And that's how – and the relationships got even tighter because we were all wrestling fans, you know?
That's fucking dope.
Yeah, man. It was cool. It was a great time. It was a great time in my life.
Yeah, it was wrestling when it picked up steam in 97, 98. I mean, everything was like – there were more wrestling shirts at those shows than there were band shirts.
No, you're right.
Sure, yeah. More Austin 316 shirts and DX and NWO, and it's true, those shirts. And then if you remember, Phil, some of the promotions started copying band shirts based off the NWO and DX, and then started incorporating wrestling into metal. And yeah, it was a great time. It was a healthy time in wrestling and a healthy time in the local band scene too.
It was a good time to exploit.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a good time to exploit. It was a money making industry, you know, like the labels were still signing bands, labels were providing clubs with material to promote bands. It's such a different ball game now. It's night and day. Like if you were out of the business for 20 years and just got back in it today, you would throw your hands up in about a day. It's just completely different landscape today, and wrestling is a different landscape today. So it's all changed, and I won't say for the better.
It's a good segue, because I was going to ask you. I know it's like beating a dead horse. You and DT talk about it every week. Mm-hmm. How do you guys keep, because all your stuff is current. Now, once in a while, you guys bring up the this week and this year in wrestling and stuff like that. But before that, you guys are doing all the current stuff. How do you keep it? How do you keep that composure and keep it fresh every week? Is it because of the love? Is it because now you have this obligation to the fan base that you guys made? Like, how do you guys keep it together? Because me and Choppy couldn't talk about this for 2 hours.
Yeah,
that's what we do. We do a throwback every week, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think when I started getting paid for it, I started having a passion. I don't know. It just comes like, it sounds like a generic thing to say. It just comes natural. It just kind of flows out. But that's really what it is. I mean, we just kind of divide. I mean, me and Don Tone, not just what this show, we're almost 9 years of Don Tone, the Gaming Gas Show. But before that, we were doing the Minority Report and then Minority Roundtable. And then we were doing the phone hotline for 4 years. Yep. And so altogether, it's 17 years that we're working together. So, I mean, yeah, it's just a flow that happens on Monday. You get hard pressed sometimes to talk about stuff, and you kind of get dispassionate is a word about it. There's times I just totally was not feeling it, and it was frustrating because I had to watch the whole wrestling show when it sucked, and I knew I didn't even want to talk about it. I knew, but you just had to make it interesting, and it's a different time now. Me and DT definitely don't go to as many shows. I was going to a lot of independent shows when I was doing the hotline, and even when I was doing Minority Report. But the last few years, I haven't been to a house show since Chris Benoit was champion. That's how it was the last time I was at a house show, Madison Square Garden.
That's like what?
So, I mean, or a regular wrestling event. I haven't been to a live wrestling event in a long time. DT went to a bunch of independent shows, but just to speak on it as a fan, you know, you never really run out of stuff. I mean, it's like baseball. You don't have to always go to the Mets or Yankee games to know baseball. If you watch it, you know, you're an aficionado on it, you played it, you've been involved in it. It just comes naturally. But I'm sure the same, you know, you guys do throwbacks and stuff, and you talk about mostly older stuff. Honestly, that's much more interesting than what's going on today, I'll be honest with you. I think, if anything, the theme of what you guys do is probably better. Yeah. Than modern, talking about modern day wrestling, because everyone always references back in the day, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I would think you guys have a leg up on a lot of podcasts as far as just being more interesting, and people want to hear the old stories, you know what I mean?
I think it's important to educate the younger fans now, man, because I mean, I became a stepdad a couple of years ago. And my little guy, you've seen pictures, man. He's totally invested in it now, you know?
Yeah.
And I educated him from a young age, just showing him DVDs of all my stuff and even VHS tapes. I think we're doing a service to these young kids, man, because they don't know what came before this. And it's an important time, especially the golden era. I mean, you're only a couple of years older than I am, but the golden era for me is like, you know, from 83 to like 96, 97, you know, and for me anyway, and I try to do my due diligence. The only reason why I keep up with the current stuff is because the fans of the show want to know our opinion, A,
yeah.
And B, I live vicariously through my little guy. You know, yeah. I only started going to shows again like 5-6 years ago because of him, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, I appreciate that, but I think it's important. I think it's giving somebody a history lesson with pro wrestling, especially when you guys, and I know it's, and you, when you talk about it on your show, and you're passionate because you guys are, lived it. We lived it. It was a great time to be a wrestling fan when it was,
yeah.
When it was just us, you know, it wasn't that mainstream yet and it was still underground and, you know, it wasn't as before rock and wrestling. You know, it was ours. You know, you knew the group of guys, your group of friends that had the magazines or the action figures or, you know, that had the swag and the shirts, and you were ordering shirts from the back of the magazine. You couldn't get them in friggin' Spencer's. You know, you couldn't get them from a .com. There was no .com. You know, there was no cable. So it was a good time, man. It was the best time of my life. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about, you know, and I've talked about this on the show where, I mean, I just even have flashbacks sometimes when I go to a newsstand and I'm going on the train, I'm going to read something. My natural instinct is always to buy a wrestling magazine, even at 49 years old that I am now. I mean, you know, granted, there's still a few wrestling magazines kicking around out there, but, you know, Pro Wrestling Illustrated is still out there. And I remember, you know, almost 38 years ago buying Pro Wrestling Illustrated in 1979, 1980, Tommy Rich or Dusty Rhodes on the cover, who I didn't care was on the cover, whoever was on the cover, I learned about him. And that was just, you know, a thrill to every month to go and get the new wrestling magazines that came out. And I can't imagine that anybody really does that now. I mean, magazines are going by a thing of the past. I mean, my God, there's no more Playboy magazine, tangible Playboy. It's not even, it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. Even Rolling Stone is mostly online. It's newsstands are, you know, pretty soon there's just going to be nothing there. But and that's why I used to love that. And used to, whether it was a trip, train ride, or it was, you know, in between classes, I would read wrestling magazines. I still have them all. I have everything pretty much 1981 on. I don't know, the 79-80 magazines fell by the wayside somewhere during several moves over the years. But I still have all my magazines. And I still go back and read them sometimes.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's how much I like it. But today, I can't imagine anybody, like, clamoring to go buy a wrestling magazine. That's what's kind of sad about it. You read everything online. Going out and buying the magazines, that was a big thrill. And people, you know, those things probably will never come back. You know, there's certain things they say are going to come back. That's not going to come back. Technology is just too advanced. And people don't even want to read a newspaper anymore, like a tangible newspaper. They go online or they watch the news. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It costs $10 now for a PWI.
Is it really?
Is it
$10
now?
$10.
Wow, that's insane.
I just bought one for my kid a couple of months ago at the Walmart. At the Walmart, he wanted it, and I was like, all right, it was AJ Styles that was on the cover. Isn't this the book you used to read? I'm like, yeah, of course it was. $10 I paid for
it. You want to know what was my last real magazine? Was Apter's WoW magazine.
Oh, the WoW. Kev mentioned that a few times on his show.
I love that. I love that.
I got them all. I have them all. It was only out for a couple of years, and I got every issue of it. It was a thick magazine. It was like getting an annual.
It was almost like
when our moms used to have those home magazines, or Allure or Elle magazine. It's a thick magazine.
Yes.
Of WoW. Big magazine.
Yeah, there was WoW. There was Wrestling Eye. You had PWI. You had the wrestler. You had Inside Wrestling.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
and then
you had Wrestling Review.
Wrestling Review.
Yeah, Wrestling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they put out a bunch of them like that with Stu Sachs. Was the editor.
Yeah. I remember that.
I was trying to think. There was a couple other ones like that. Just like periodically came out. I can't remember what the other one. I remember Wrestling Eye. Wrestling Eye was like the
Canadian.
Print was kind of muddy.
Yeah,
it wasn't as sharp as of pictures as they were in the other magazines. Though, but the wrestler Inside Wrestling, yeah, Pro Wrestling Illustrated was always like the magazine to get, and you actually thought that was legitimate, and then Bill Apter pretty much admitted that he made up most of the interviews for wrestling. Bill Apter did a thing, can Al Perez take the games that the WWE play, and then Al Perez, like, I never actually even spoke to Bill, but I was cool with it, you know, it's like, all right. He's like, they made up stuff. And I kind of thought of that back in the day, but I said, well, wait a minute, what does it take to call up a wrestler and interview him? Of course these are real. Why wouldn't they be real? And then he pretty much admitted he didn't talk to half the people, and they were just, you know, documented in the office of what the wrestler would probably say. I mean, I had no idea that was the case. I thought they were actually interviewing the wrestlers. I only learned that a few years ago, by the way.
My favorite was the rankings in the back.
Yes.
Because you have to understand something. I didn't get cable until 1989. So I was tape trading before that, you know. And I that's how I knew about Memphis and AWA and, you know, WCCW. And all we had in New York was WWF. And you had Channel 68 after Uncle Floyd. You had Florida Championship Wrestling. And you had, you know, NWA. But they were all like... 6 months behind. So you were watching in June. You were watching shit from Starcade, you know. Yeah. So that was what you had. There was nothing else, you know.
No, they have. What was I going to say? They were usually. They may be like 2 months behind. Like I remember watching some of that stuff. Like we had talked about when. Well, even the magazines were a few months behind because when Bruiser Brody died in July of '88, they didn't have his death till the September, October magazines. So I mean, they were really. But they had at that point in '88, they had Wade Keller had the Torch out already, and you can order the Observer through the wrestling magazines or just through like connections you would find. So I was getting the dirt sheets around '87, '88, and I got them up until about the Attitude Era, and then I stopped getting them because I got on, you know, online after that and went to websites. But I got the dirt sheets were really helpful in the late 80s. I can't believe like Keller and Meltzer are still not only around but very relevant in the industry. You think they would have been by the wayside. Now everyone's got a, and I think Meltzer's got a podcast now too. I don't know if Keller's on there, but they were important too. I got them and the wrestling magazines. I got the real news. I thought I got the real news from the dirt sheets, and then the fluff and the color stuff and stuff, posters I put on my wall in the 80s when I was a teenager, I got from regular wrestling magazines, you know.
Yeah, PWI had the best posters.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they did. Me and my brother had them all over the wall. It was Missy Hyatt or the Road Warriors or anybody, the Von Erichs, anybody. It could be, you know, Jerry Lawler. Even if we didn't like the wrestler, we had the posters up in our room.
Kev, what territory? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go.
What territory do you miss the most?
Probably World Class. That was like one of my favorites. That I was able to get. We got World Class. All that was on Saturday. Was at 85, 86, 87. That was on Saturday at that like 6 o'clock. And then we would watch it at 7. We would watch NWA from 7 to 9 or 7 to 8, 7 to 8:30, whenever that was on. But I remember it's 6 o'clock for them. But we also watched UWF. So we were conflicted because World Class and UWF were run at the same time. Because we had cable. We got cable in 86.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow,
you got it. I mean, I was conflicted most times of what to watch. And we weren't... The thing of taping that stuff back then, we didn't do that back then. So, and also, I had like 8 people in my house. I have 5 brothers and stuff. We only had 2 TVs. So couldn't tape half the things because we just couldn't do it. But we would flip back and forth with the stations. And World Class, though, was definitely one of my favorites. And the UWF, which was Mid-South. It was only UWF for 2 years, but I love that too.
Yeah, that was when Herb Abrams took over for...
No, that was a different
Bill
one.
Bill Watts.
That was another Universal Wrestling. This was the one that Bill Watts had at Mid-South, where Jim Ross was an announcer, and Joel, his son was an announcer, Michael Hayes. This is where Butch Reed and Missing Link and Savannah Jack and stuff. That was the UWF, which they sold it off. And then Sting and Rick Steiner and Eddie Gilbert went to the NWA, if you remember, in 87.
Yes.
So that Herb Abrams thing was a different thing that didn't come along till around 89.
Yeah, that's just, it's so good fond memory. And I'm glad the network picked some of that stuff up, you know. Yeah.
They just put up some new stuff of new episodes of WCCW on there.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. They have a lot of WCCW on there.
Did they?
Okay. Yeah, they do. It just, the only thing that's manipulated is the music, obviously, because they used, you know, back in the day, they all used copyrighted, you know, rock and roll music and stuff like that. We all know that, but, you know, it is what it is. It was a fun time, man. It really was a fun time.
Well, I miss, like, when I watched, you know, and I'll occasionally some of the clips on YouTube will have the real music, and watching, I remember Eddie Gilbert coming out, Missy Hyatt, and he came out the hot stuff from Donna Summer, and then the WWE Network just has the generic music, just like... You know, of all the guys in Mid-South, all and the Fantastics used to come out, the sharp-dressed man from ZZ Top.
Yeah, so did Jimmy,
Yeah, and then on WWE Network, it's just generic garbage music. There's just not even any vocals to it. It's just like instrumental. It's just like a complete not. But everyone came out. Brian Pillman used to come out to Rock It from Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it's all generic now, so I can't even watch it on the WWE Network because, believe it or not, the entrances to me are almost as important as the match.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, my buddy Mike from the Midnight Jury. He refuses to get the network. He just gets he'll still get tapes. The music bothers him that much.
I've actually found a guy in down South Jersey that sells like the original like footage on DVD.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty cheap. I think he charges like $5 a DVD for all the original episodes from like NWA and WCCW. So I like to go down there sometimes and buy some stuff off of him.
Yeah, I remember
that. Oh, nice. Yeah,
Jimmy Garvin did Sharp Dress Man as well. He used that,
Did he really?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. These have music videos too, right, Kev? They had the Fantastics had a music video. The Rock.
Yeah, the first guys to use Sharp Dressed Man, it was the Fabulous Ones, and then Jimmy Garvin was using it, and also the Fantastics were using it. And I think that Fabulous Ones then broke up, and then I think Jimmy Garvin changed his music. But there were some people using the same music, believe it or not, in different territories. They were using the same stuff. I mean, I don't know if you guys even know this, but I mean, I'll give you a little, see if you guys know this, maybe a little trivia. What was Macho Man Randy Savage's song that when he came from his father's outlaw territory and went to Memphis when he was feuding with Jerry Lawler? Remember that famous clip of him and Lanny Poffo stuff pile driving Ricky Martin on the table?
On a table, yeah.
Macho Man came out to a particular song from a movie, from a famous movie that was out around that time. Do you guys remember what the name of the song and the movie was?
No, sir.
No.
It was Fame by Irene Cara.
Get out of here!
Wow.
What?
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He used to come out to Fame. Yep. Fame from Irene Cara. That was his song. That's what he came out to.
There was a There was a dollar store in my neighborhood in the late 80s that sold a videotape called World's Greatest Grudge Matches. It was like a bootleg tape. Mm-hmm. And they showed the clip, just the one clip of them pile driving Ricky Morton through the table.
Ooh.
That's all. Yeah. It was like a. They showed like Kamala, Jerry Lawler. It was like a Mid-South like compilation. I still have the tape.
Oh, nice!
It's from a dollar store. My mom got it for me. It was like from one of these dollar stores in Brooklyn. But I never saw the whole match. So
no, it was. I mean, that's really what got Lanny Poffo his job. That he was a, even though he came here as like a fluffy kind of opening act, enhancement guy. That's how Savage got him the job, was showed him the stuff that him and Lanny did in Memphis together. But yeah, I mean, Macho Man came out to you can find it on some of the things. You can find it in his, I'm trying to remember the name of the territory his father had in
it was IWA.
IWA. IWA. He came, Ox Baker was there, yes. And guys like that. That was the music that they came out to, because at that point, in 1980, when Fame was out, actually Junkyard Dog was coming out to Another One Bites the Dust from Queen.
Yeah. Yes.
Then he switched his music to Atomic Dog from George Clinton.
Yep.
And then of course he came here and had the unforgettable Grab Them Cakes
with Vicky Robinson. Yeah.
Hey, Kevin.
But if you watch old school Junkyard Dog, he came out to Another One Bites the Dust when he was in 1980, and that opened the floodgates, and that's what Savage, all those 1980 movies, Fame and everything that came out during 80-81. Everyone started using music from movies and stuff, and that's where Michael Hayes was using, the Freebird song, and actually everyone had all the different. There was a lot of they tried to document exactly, and Kerry Von Erich came out to Tom Sawyer, so they tried to document actually who really started it. Michael Hayes takes credit for it, for coming out for using music first before anybody else. But I think Savage might have been using it before him. I think he came out to Fame in 1980. I mean, it's whatever, apples and oranges. It doesn't really matter. It's all the same thing. But Hayes always takes credit for that. But I found some clips of Savage doing it before Hayes was doing it. So with using regular music. And no one thought that anybody would hit them up for copyright. And you know what? For the first 10 years, nobody did. None of those artists hit up anybody for copyright. It was around 1990 when everyone's like, hey, using our music, we don't get anything out of it. Bands used to just find it flattering, or artists were just like, hey, my song is being used by a wrestler. But then you got agents involved saying, hey, wait a minute, they should pay you for that. And that's what killed everything right there with original music.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Did you prefer Savage in Memphis or in the WWF?
I liked them both. I liked Savage when he first came in and he had the cape and he had the, you know, the dragons on his cape and he had, like, you know, the headband. I didn't like him when he became old Mr. Turquoise with cowboy hats and silly and tucking his jeans in the cowboy boots. I just didn't like that look. I liked his original look when he came in wearing the trunks, not wearing long tights. I hated that look when he did that too. He came in like almost like just a real wrestler. Trunks, the cape, the headband, you know, you had Elizabeth there. It was like kind of just the basics, not anything over the top with the ridiculous like fringe and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't like basically his second run as world champion. I didn't like. I liked his first run when he won in New Jersey in the tournament when he beat Ted DiBiase. I was loving Savage then. The 90s version of Savage, I was not liking. I just didn't. And I liked when he came up at Memphis. He was a fucking badass heel when he cuts. You got to see some of the promos he cut in Memphis on Jerry Lawler. He was scary. He was almost like a bruiser boy. People were afraid of him. You know, he was, and he's not that big a guy. And I never even realized that Savage was barely 6 feet. That I never thought of. I always thought he was 6'3", 6'4". I didn't realize that Savage, literally his real stats were 6 feet, and his real weight was 222. I thought he was way bigger than that.
Yeah.
So because he carried himself bigger than that.
Yeah.
I mean, 222. I wish I weighed that. I mean, that's 222 is like, you know what I mean? That's like a regular. That's today. That's basically Justin Gabriel. You know what I mean? That's who is 222. That's CM Punk.
Yeah.
That's not like a big wrestler. That's not Macho Man. Like 222. That was his real weight, but they listed him as 240, 250 when they did the announcements, if you guys remember.
Yes.
Yeah. And Lanny Poffo takes credit for giving him the Ooh Yeah, like, because Pampiro for Furpo did the Ooh Yeah. So that's
in Hawaii, I believe.
In Hawaii, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. You know, so many of those old guys, that's the funny thing. And you guys obviously do a show based on throwbacks. I mean, I don't know how far you guys really go back with some of that stuff, but the Pampero Furpo and a lot of those guys, I mean, even like Bull Ramos and a lot of the Black Gorman and Black Alive, there's so many guys who used things that guys later on used for and then they caught fire, but they were so under the radar, some of these guys. They were just traveling wrestlers who went from territory, and only if you were a diehard wrestling fan did you know who some of these guys were. You know, like Pampero Furpo. I say that on the Don Tony Kevin Castle show. I would say 5 out of 5,000 would know who I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and I would honestly say that not because they're stupid or whatever, but because that's so far back and he's so off the beaten path.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I knew who he was, and I knew who he was in 1979. Like Dick the Bulldog Brower. You guys remember him?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
I mean, I said his name on Don Tony Kevin Cash show. Someone said, dude, who's Bulldog Brower? Who's that? Like a George the Animal Steel character? And I was like, wow, this is a lot of these guys never got their due at all. Some of these groundbreaking guys. I'll be like, hey, you ever hear of Buzz Sawyer? Yeah, okay. Basically, Buzz Sawyer was copying Dick the Bulldog Brower.
Yeah.
Then you go from there. You know what I mean? It's kind of, you go from there. It's like Buzz Sawyer and Kevin Sullivan weren't original. They took it from somebody from the 60s and 70s. But sometimes people, and also, let's be honest, fans don't even, you know, some fans love to go back and really be students of the game. And just like people who love metal.
Yeah.
They love to go back into the 60s and Deep Purple and the roots of Deep Purple and who was the original singer for this and that. Well, I'm a big fan of Rainbow and that brought me to Metallica. But there's other people who just like, it's my parents' music. I heard that in the house. I wasn't really into it. It wasn't metal enough for me. But it depends on what kind of fan you are. You know, like obviously, like I said, you guys clearly love the old school.
Yeah.
And who's going to listen to this show is going to love the old school. But dare I say, even I'm sure you guys who have people listen to your show, you'll drop a name who they'll go have to research it because they never heard of him before.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
I had to tell somebody about Rick McGraw. Now you mentioned Rick McGraw.
Oh, I love Rick McGraw. Oh, yeah. He's one of my favorites.
When I watched him, he was a job guy.
Yeah,
but no.
He was a job guy, but I didn't even care that he was a job guy. He was a job guy who was over. Who Let's Go Rick Chance would be throughout the arena at Ridgewood Grove Arena, and you know, he got him and SD Jones. They might have been job guys, but the crowd didn't treat them like that.
And SD Jones was before he was a job guy, he was a regional champion in several territories. So a lot of these guys, by the time guys my age were seeing him, they weren't as popular. Obviously, they were working for Vince at that point. But I mean, no, when you mention these names, like I had to educate somebody about Bruiser Brody.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's,
no.
See, that That's unbelievable to me, because that would be a guy who gets referenced so many times, and there's been so many times they've tried to come up with a new Bruiser Brody.
No way.
And that's the kiss of death, by the way, when they try to declare someone the new Bruiser Brody. It was the kiss of death for Luke Harper. Yeah. It was the kiss of death for Sylvester Turkai. It was the kiss of death for Mike Knox. It's the kiss of death to be tagged the next, because there is no Bruiser Brody. There is no other Bruiser Brody. There's never going to be a guy that way ever again. It's just no one's built that way anymore. That's an old school man. Yeah. And the guys like that are a dying breed. They're in their 60s and 70s now, and they don't wrestle anymore.
A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to interview the writer of the Bruiser Brody book. And
oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's on the website. It's on .com. You can check it out.
I got to check it out. Well, I know Barbara, his wife, finally came out with a book.
Yeah.
Did you guys get a chance to read it? I'm going to actually make a conscious effort to get that book like this year. I've been meaning to get it earlier on in the year. I haven't got it yet. I'm going to get it like within the next couple of weeks. I'm going to get a copy of
it. It's on the Brody. Both Brody books are on the ECW Press. It's called ECW Press. It was the name of the publishing company. But we talked to the writer, and the book is basically just quotes from his family, wrestlers, like friends of his, like he played football with in Texas back in the day. Mm-hmm. But even the writer said it. Like even his wife knew it. Like, there was nobody like him. He was just a different. Yeah. He was a rare breed. It was like, you know, there'll never be another Brody. You know, and that was the attitude that was implicated in the book too. Like inadvertently, it wasn't like a thing where it was like a bragging thing. It was like people, all his peers said the same thing you and I just said. You know, it was that kind of party back in the day for him. So.
Yeah, it was just that, like, that's like, everyone is so, you know, tagging someone the next this, the next that. I mean, now we're at the point where, oh, this guy could be the next Rock, the next Austin. He used to be the next Brody, the next Flair, the next, you know, Arn Anderson or whatever. But one thing I notice is nobody becomes the next anybody. It's just another wrestler.
It's true.
You know, I mean, I haven't yet seen the next, you know, I was laughing the other day when I'm not going to say the podcaster, but saying, I really feel Jason Jordan could be the next Rock. And I'm like, but what evidence do you have that could happen? Oh, if you remember, Rock came out and, you know, he was all smiling and stuff. No, I mean, come on. You can see the charisma. I watch Rocky Maivia stuff and I look back and Rock had something even then, even in the way he reacted to the crowd. Jason Jordan, I think they're mistaking these blue chip athletes and just thinking that charisma just drips off a blue chip athlete, but that's not true. Yeah, Kurt Angle, yeah, all these guys who are able to do that. But like to me, Jason Jordan, no way, shape, or form is going to be a new Rock. Not because I don't want him to be, just because there hasn't been one, and that's the kiss of death for him. If anybody tells him he's going to be that, I hope he's the next. Let him just be the first Jason Jordan before he's anything else. Because right now, what I'm seeing, I don't like.
Absolutely. So before we get into tonight's throwback, I want to ask you a question, and I'm going to give you the book for 6 months. You're going to book Raw for 6 months. Tell me, what would you do to fix some of the nonsense that goes on weekly on television? Like, how would you address the 3 hours, the promos, the bullshit? Can you fix it? Is it fixable?
I think anything's fixable. I think it's them having more faith and more belief in some of the talent that they have. I sometimes don't even get what WWE signs people. And I don't think it's to lock everybody up and screw Ring of Honor and screw TNA. I don't think they think, honestly, my personal opinion, no one's told me this or anything, is that Vince, even Triple H has his ear to the grindstone, who's hot on the, that's why he signed Adam Cole. But I don't think they give a fuck about those federations of being anything. They won't lose a dime or a dollar from those federations. This is not 1996 where the ECW's leering over their shoulder and WCW's got them in the ratings. They have no competition. They are number one. They are the Yankees in a sea of Long Island Ducks. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what they are. They are a major league franchise empire, and minor league teams are around them. Come on. I mean, I think that's so stupid. They want to make sure the Ring of Honor is, no, come on. They don't have a slither of the money WWE has. And same thing with Impact. The big man kind of looks at them as like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. And he goes on with his day. I really don't think, you know, because it's like I said, it's a major big-time player in a sea of minor leaguers. Minor league in the sense of the money and the production value they have, they can't compete. I'm not saying that the talent they have isn't good, but also it's not as developed. And if it was as developed, they'd be up there in the WWE. Because everyone says, oh, WWE is going to ruin them. Well, room what? I mean, they haven't only become a household name until you get to the big dance. You'll be a regional name. If you want to be, listen, nothing wrong with being a regional name, just like there's regional celebrities. Exactly. There's people who are just known to people in the soap opera world, but if you ask a mainstream person who reads Star magazines, they never heard of the person. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's fine to have a Tito Santana career. Everyone can't have a top guy, macho man, career, worldwide celebrity. When you show a picture of him, everybody knows who it is. Not everybody can be that. But the problem with the WWE is they have a lot of, like, you kind of stop and say, oh, yeah, him. Just like they had Dolph Ziggler on the other night. And you could just see no enthusiasm. The crowd didn't care. No one reacted. Dolph was all over the Road Rules promo because everyone's just lost on these shows. So as far as Raw goes, they're circling up, they're putting everything around Brock Lesnar. Let's face it, he's a part-time player. I was in favor of them taking the belt off of Brock because I didn't like the I'm here only when I want to be contract. But then again, someone sold it to me that, you know, should the champ really be on every week? Shouldn't it be special? Shouldn't he just, you know, trot him out every week to stand there and have Paul Heyman go on and on about the same things all the time? Is that not going to, like, take the shine off the apple? Yeah, probably. So I kind of had a little bit of I went a different way. I agree with Don Tony that it's probably best, since Brock Lesnar is a bigger star than everybody else he's competing against, it's probably best to keep the belt on him. If he's going to make more appearances on TV, and WWE needs to work that out with him. And it seems like Lesnar's around a lot more lately. You guys probably noticed that too.
Yeah.
But if he makes the appearances and around, he doesn't have to defend the title or come out every week, but he's got to be around more often than he was since WrestleMania. I think they have to, you know, Braun Strowman, there's a new star. They're creating a homegrown new star. Great. Roman Reigns, I mean, he's got so many problems. I hate to even get into the Roman Reigns thing because it's like a no-win situation. The people who love him, and the people who hate him even more. So, but he's here to stay. I don't see him going anywhere unless he gets injured. He's in the title picture. I think they should push The Miz more, in my opinion. But I think The Miz has that glass ceiling. He's in a continental title level. But then again, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, Mr. Perfect was never the world champion, and he did fine on that IC title level. I think they should build it up where the IC title means something again. And I think some of these other guys that they have to fill the 3 hours, and some of the girls that they have, like Nia Jax, she was supposed to be a big deal. She still gets no reaction. Emma gets no reaction. Jason Jordan gets no reaction. You go up and down the line. You know what the problem is, guys? Is there's one word that describes a lot of the people in that locker room: indifference. Yeah, nobody cares exactly about a lot of these guys. There's no reaction. And as you know, Phil, boo, cheer, something. No reaction is the kiss of death in wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
Absolutely.
You guys know that, like I said, because there's, you know, oh, I hate Reigns. I can't wait to boom when he comes out. Watch what I'm going to do. That's someone who's like, they actually planned on, it sounds stupid, but that's actually a positive thing. It's like there's emotion involved in that. But with Jason Jordan, they're like, oh, this, just like those 205, those poor bastards in 205 Live. Come on. And everyone has got it. The word is out. And I'm sure you guys have heard. When 205 comes on, hit the bathrooms, hit the restroom, hit the fucking concession stand.
Right.
Do you guys remember the cruiserweights back in WCW?
Of course.
Can't miss TV.
Yeah.
That was where Jericho and Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero came from. Even before that, you guys, yeah, like Art Barr, and you had light heavyweights in Puerto Rico and stuff. And they were like, they had your attention. Now the cruiser, when you say cruiserweight, bathroom break. That's what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no oomph.
I think the only appealing thing about the cruiserweight division is Neville. I think Neville is like the best part of the whole cruiserweight division.
They just put Enzo, and listen, I said this a couple weeks ago, not that I'm a genius at all, but even someone's like, dude, you are right, Enzo, Dave, and he confronted fucking you. How did you know that? I said, I just knew that after I heard the heat that was going on with Enzo, I knew that the Cass thing, he was just a squash thing. And now Cass is legitimately hurt.
Yeah.
But Enzo was in a bad place in the locker room behind the scenes. But he's over, and he sells merch. I was looking at the top merch sellers. Enzo's top five.
What?
Top five.
Wow.
Enzo's merchandise. So he's gotten, kids are dressing up, putting the blonde wigs on around the arenas. You could see it. And people who have gone to the arena said, dude, I got to admit, he's an annoying little prick, but Enzo is over. I'm like, I know, he is. They can't get rid of him. So they're like, 205 is boring as shit. Brian Kendrick didn't work out, and I love Brian Kendrick. Brian Kendrick didn't work out. Austin Aries took a powder and left. He couldn't take it anymore. Tozawa, come on, no one cares about him. He's not, the next great Muda.
No,
I'm being sarcastic. Oh, saying that. Okay. So you got, wait a minute, Neville is Mr. Serious. Let's get a guy who's going to go in there and light it up. And Enzo, perfectly, they're the same size. Now, he can eat him up in the ring, but no one's really got to know that. Enzo is about his size, about his weight. The only thing, you know, Neville's a better wrestler, but Enzo's going to make it exciting. If they put the belt on him, they'll sell the belt. They'll sell the 205. The Cruiserweight title will mean something again because Enzo will deck it out or something. Then they can sell it to little kids. And like this Enzo can actually save this division. I mean, how crazy is that? He's basically, his charisma and his gimmick can basically keep people tuned in to a feud with Neville where they were tuning out in droves with Tozawa. So that was a smart move to put Enzo down. And Enzo doesn't even weigh 180 pounds. So he should be a cruiserweight anyway. He has no business up with the big guys. All he is he's knocked out every week by a fucking heavyweight. So put him in the when I saw him debut and the crowd went nuts, I says, my God, they did what they were supposed to do with this guy. Now everyone say, well, they had to get him out of the main locker room and get him on 205 because he's so hated. Nah, they had to do that to save this fucking division, because otherwise just collapse the whole cruiserweight thing. It's an epic failure. And I mean, come on, these guys come out you can't even name half these guys. I mean, really, they're all just figure Cedric Alexander. Yeah, great wrestlers. Nobody cares about any of them. Nobody has any emotional investment in any of these guys. So with Enzo now there in the cruiserweight division, that could help. But the cruiserweight's got to get some time on TV. I realize that. And they put him in the middle of the show, and it just takes the air out of the balloon. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah. Do you think the problem nowadays is just that there's not enough characters on TV?
Yeah, there's not enough characters at all. I mean, listen, and I got to be a little friendly with this guy, like on Twitter. I at first mocked him too, and then I said to myself, I'm a hypocrite, because the Congo Kong, do you guys know who that is?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay, Congo Kong. When I saw him, I was like everybody else. Oh, you fucking, is this a joke? Blah, blah, blah. And I know he probably took great offense to that with podcasts and stuff. He's been on the circuit for a bunch of years doing this gimmick. I didn't know a lot about him. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. I accepted Akeem. I accepted Kamala. I accepted George the Animal Steel. I accepted Missing Link. I accepted, One Man Gang. And I can go up and down the line with Lock. I even accepted Loch Ness.
Purple.
So
Haze.
It's like, you know what I mean? I Roadblock, Rochester Roadblock, go up and down the line with these big, heavy, you know, fat guys, let's call them, who Viscera. You know, so why am I so down on Congo Kong? If anything, the guy's got guts exposing himself like that. Sure, he can wear something to hide his stuff that he wants to hide and accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. But they're just like, fuck it, just throw him out there. Kamala had a big stomach and sagging chest. Work for him. So it was weird that I did. I felt like everybody else, like, oh my God, this guy's an embarrassment, blah, blah, blah. But I started taking a second look at it and saying, wait a minute, he's a character. And this is what I used to love about wrestling. So I did and then I found he's a really nice guy, too, in real life, by the way. And so I kind of changed my mind on that a little bit. Now I watch him. Granted, like I said, I don't take him as some serious threat, and I get a lot of young fans will still kind of find them like, what is this dude? Because there's always that question today, would Kamala, Ultimate Warrior, would these characters work today? Probably not, because of everything of Insider and everybody, you know, knowing too much about the wrestlers. There's no mystery anymore. But the characters are fine because it is a TV show. So I don't mind a guy like Congo Kong. I don't know if Congo Kong would cut it here in the WWE because, you know, obviously they're not, since Viscera, they've been much different on. I mean, listen, they were body shaming Bray Wyatt and Kevin Owens for a while. And listen, they got them in T-shirts. Yeah. So clearly they don't want anybody taking off their shirt who doesn't look the part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you guys notice, half the roster wears a T-shirt.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
You know, Phil, going back in the day, would you imagine that, I'd say, a quarter of the male roster wears a T-shirt in the ring? Would you ever believe that 20 years ago?
No, I call it the Tommy Dreamer syndrome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. Like, and it's so natural now to see someone in like basketball shorts to hide the legs, and that they don't, you know, and a T-shirt is totally normal. Because I remember, you guys remember the famous Ric Flair Sting last match on WCW where Ric Flair wore a shirt.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was like most. You watch it, you're like, this is so wrong. You know, it's like he's wearing a shirt. But now everyone, guys in world title matches are wearing T-shirts. So it's like. It's the norm now, and it's not necessarily even because they're fat. Like, look at Baron Corbin. He's not fat. People said he had to tone up a little bit, and the guy started wearing a fucking T-shirt. You know, and that's a guy whose whole gimmick should be showing his tattoos off.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But, yeah. So it's funny, like, how things have changed, because you talk about booking. I mean, just and also the WWE's spiteful burial of talent when someone says something wrong on Twitter or they do something wrong, they bury guys and they just demean them in bad angles. And honestly, Phil, you know, that was going on back in the day when you saw a guy in the opening match at the Garden, you're like, well, why is this guy wrestling Moondog Spot? You know what I mean? So like, he must have did something in the locker room. You know, why is Davey Boy Smith in the opening match against Charlie Fulton?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, you know, you see stuff like that because, and then you would read in the dirt sheets, Davey Boy Smith rubbing people the wrong way in the back. And you're like, oh, it's like a punishment. That's why he's like not on TV that much anymore.
Right.
See, now we're all smart. We're all smart to the game. And WWE does that too much with people. I don't understand. Like, I know Baron Corbin's on SmackDown. We're talking about Raw, but they would do that just as quick with somebody on Raw. It's this self-burial thing, and they say it's to humble the guy. I think sometimes you never recover from it. I think Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin are two good examples of that. They just happen to be on SmackDown. I mean, they brought Bobby Roode in basically to tell Baron Corbin, fuck you, he's taking your spot. And now Baron Corbin, by the way, it's almost official. He's bumped down to the U.S. title. He's no longer in the world title picture, and now Bobby Roode is being catapulted to the top.
Yep.
So that's what WWE does. They got to start have more belief in some of the younger talent, you know, and not be so quick to give up on anybody. They don't give up on anybody in 205 Live. Why do they give up on everybody else? Like the Luke Harpers and the company's very confusing. Listen, I'm a big fan of Elias Sampson right now, the Drifter. I think he's one of the best characters they've had in a while. I mean, I love his cadence, his delivery. He's great. He looks like a combination of like Hercules Hernandez and like kind of like an old school Mid-South wrestler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He reminds me of like a guy who would be in Mid-South back in the day. He's like, a beast. Like, and I seen his stuff when he was Logan Shulo on the independent stuff, and he could talk. He was really good. He's been around for a long time. He's not some guy who came out of a gym. So if people research this guy, they would see on the Pennsylvania Independence, he was around for like 8 years.
Yeah, like
so he's a great talent. And I'm watching him. He's getting over. He's doing the thing where he insults every town. But he does it in his own way. He's not copying Rock and trying to be charming. He has his own kind of, his own way about his own delivery. He has that kind of methodical delivery, and he's great. And he got his new shirt now, the concert shirt. I was even considering buying it. That's, and I haven't liked a wrestler that much in 15 years that I bought a wrestling shirt. So, but they could screw him up just by putting him in the wrong angles the next couple weeks. And then people will be like, ah, another NXT flop, another Ascension guy. You know what I mean?
AK, I actually thought he was going for the IC title when he was going up against Ambrose a couple of months ago because he looked really good against Ambrose.
He did. He looked great against Finn Balor, too. And now he crushes Ron Killings. And, you know, Ron Killings, let's face it, is an enhancement guy. But Ron Killings is basically the new Val Venus. And, I mean, that's what he is. but where do you go from here? Now, you can have him come out and do a segment in the middle of the show and do the guitar thing. But they're wasting a guy who's an athlete who can do something. Now, who knows? Next week, he could come out and challenge and say, I'm just buying my time, or he can attack somebody. But they got to build up new stars, and I think he's one of the guys they should put the rocket ship on, because I think he could. And I could just imagine when he becomes a babyface, and when he goes out there and says, "Who wants to walk with Elias?" It's going to be like The Rock said, or it could be something that big, like a yes or something like that. Because even saying to the crowd, "Who wants to walk with Elias?" You get the whole crowd cheer. That's a babyface pop right there. They have a built-in catchphrase with this guy with that. So, you know, but will they capitalize on it? I don't know. I almost get frustrated to get behind anybody anymore. I just like Nakamura. Everyone's declaring him the new this and that, and I said he's going to lose to Jinder Mahal at that match. Any wrestling fan who had any seasoning knew that guy was going to lose that match to Jinder Mahal. And then you see all the people like holding their heads and shocked and mouths open that Nakamura lost to Jinder Mahal. I saw it from a mile away. I don't think they believe in Nakamura yet as their world champion.
I was one of those people that was in shock.
Yeah, no, I saw it because they're putting too much behind Jinder Mahal. And listen, I'm not big on Jinder Mahal being champion either, but I also wasn't big on Randy Orton being champion because I was just falling asleep watching him.
Yeah.
I think Randy Orton is so great. Maybe he's too good because he kind of phones it in at this point. And when I hear Randy Orton's music and stuff, I head for the refrigerator. I don't even care. There's nothing Randy. I don't want to see Randy Orton anymore. And he's a Hall of Famer. He's a great wrestler. He probably would have been a horseman back in the NWA in the 80s. But I just find Randy Orton is just phoning in at this point because he's disinterested. I don't think Randy Orton cares. I really don't.
No.
I think he's just there. He's a superstar. He's a millionaire. And he's just like, you know, whatever they do with me, they do with me. And that's probably why he agreed to drop it to Jinder Mahal. He's like, whatever. I don't care. Just pay me. You know, but Raw is the better show, though. I'll say this much, Phil. Raw is definitely the better show. SmackDown put on a better show this past week. SmackDown was better post-SummerSlam. But we'll see what happens next week and everything, you know, when it goes back. But Raw has the better superstars on, in my opinion. It was great to see Bobby Roode. But Bobby Roode, a lot of people forget, too, he's 40 years old. He's not a kid.
I know.
If this was baseball, he would be a part-time player. Exactly. So, I mean, wrestling fans, that's another thing wrestling fans have stopped doing, acting like guys. I wonder if Abyss is ever going to come here. 48-year-old Abyss? Yeah, okay. Let's have him come here. Well, that window of him feuding with The Undertaker peaked 7 years ago. So it's like when people say, hopefully Abyss will come here. And I just listen to these wrestling fans. I'm like, do you guys know that how old some of these guys are? Oh, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It absolutely matters because it's supposed to be about the future. Chris Jericho is a rarity. What Chris Jericho did in the twilight of his career in the last 2 years is amazing. But not everyone's like Chris Jericho. You know what I mean? Sure. Not everyone. I always thought Rob Van Dam can come back here and pull a Chris Jericho, have some great matches, get some guys over, team up with a younger superstar, help build him up. But I don't think Rob wants to do that or be on the road that much. Like I said, Chris is just a boundless ball of energy. He tours, as you know, Phil. He's got the band. He tours. He's Chris Jericho's like a 48-year-old, 18-year-old.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But not everybody's like that. How many guys, Phil, back in the day, can you picture them bringing in their late 40s, coming in to help boost ratings?
No.
I mean, even people say, oh, Hogan comes back. He's not going to wrestle. He's 60.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to make an appearance when Hogan comes back. I'm like, does anybody even hear what they're saying?
Yeah.
It's almost like they don't consider wrestlers human beings, that there is a window of, like, this window is closed for them to compete now. It's gone. So, I mean, these are all probably people who are waiting for fucking Matt Noakes to come back to the Yankees. I mean, seriously. Oh, my God. You think Piazza's coming back to the Mets, Kev? Yes, that's what the Mets need. Let's get Piazza back. That's the whole thing.
Let's bring Paul LaDuca back.
And listen, the whole thing is throwbacks, and I'm an old-school guy, but I get sometimes shit on because I'm like, oh, you claim you're old-school, and then you have this thing with age. Look, it's not that I have a thing with age. Age has a thing with age.
Exactly.
There is a window. This is not a soap opera where you go on, and the guy who played Victor Newman on The Young and the Restless is forever 50, and he's now 80. That's not the way it works because it's a physical sport, wrestling.
Nope.
So how can you expect a 55-year-old man to go at it with Kevin Owens in the ring on a regular basis?
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Not everybody could be Julio Franco, you know?
Right, exactly. That's not being a betrayer of old school philosophy. No, it's not. I'm being realistic, and if anything, I'm being an older guy who admits that we need to build a future and stop living in the past.
Well, listen, 20 years ago, almost to the day, you and I were at a very, very special event. We had about, how many people did we have with us that day?
Phil, you're talking about Steve's bachelor party?
Oh, no. besides that.
Okay.
No, we were at SummerSlam 97. We rolled with like 20 guys deep in the upper deck.
That many?
Yeah, well, there was like...
Yeah, it was about between 15 and 18. Like, yeah, it was more than 15, but less than 20. It was around 18 people.
I know your brother, I think, was with us, right?
My brother John, who's John Draper on the Wrestling Soup. Yeah, he was with us. There was
Mike from
a bunch of guys from Four in the Chamber, SOS. Some of the guys worked at Castle Heights, John's sister, her boyfriend at the time. I mean, I remember it was about three cars of people.
Yeah, Mike from Mortal Remains, Brian from Sudden Fear was with us, I believe. Ray was with us, our buddy Ray. He was part of the Mortal Remains group.
Yeah, I think he was there. But I remember a couple of guys from Four in the Chamber because I rode in the car ride with them back home.
Oh, Cedric,
I rode with John there with his sister, his brother, and her boyfriend at the time. And then I rode back with the Four in the Chamber guys with my brother. And there was somebody else there. I can't remember who else was there. But, yeah, it was well over 15 people.
Yeah, in Choppy's hometown of New Jersey.
Yeah.
East Rutherford. You know what? It was a good card. And
I was going to ask you guys, like, when you were before the event even started, did you think you were going to be a part of history?
Because
this is a very historic event.
No.
We had no idea. I don't think we had any idea at all of what was going on. I mean, who knew that we were going to see, you know, Brian Pillman for the last time a few months later be found dead in a hotel?
Yeah.
I mean, we got to see Pillman that night. Who knew that Owen Hart almost was going to cripple Steve Austin that night?
Yeah.
We almost saw the beginning and end of Austin as the top guy. So, I mean, there was a lot of monumental things that went on that night. I mean, that was my first time getting to see, and I was a huge Brian Pillman fan.
Yes.
And that was my first time getting to see Brian Pillman live, and I was really in tune with that match with Goldust. It was short. I really didn't get what it was supposed to get. But yeah, a lot of things went on, and of course the Bret Hart documentary was being filmed that night that we would learn later on, Wrestling with Shadows. There was so much, you're right, that it was a landmark thing, you know, with Michaels fucking up the botch and the referee thing in the end with Taker and Bret Hart. There would just, you know, when I look back on that, once again, it was 20 years ago. It seems like 30 years ago.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. No, Kev, you were really there for Los Boricuas, though. No, that you were really there.
Did the Boricuas wrestle that night?
Yeah, they fought the DOA, the Crush and
Disciples of
Hell. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, Harris Brothers. Remember those guys with the neo Nazis?
Of course,
yeah. But what stands out to me besides the Austin thing, besides hanging out with everybody that night, we tailgated in the parking lot.
That's fucking dope.
We had a good time. Yeah. It was just a fun time to be alive. The cage match with Mankind and Triple H.
Yeah,
that was crazy.
My favorite spot of the match was when China went for the nutshot and hit the ass cheek of Mankind.
Oh God!
It was such a good night, Kev.
Yeah, no, it was a good time. I mean, I remember Mike SOS, John's brother, has a habit, and he does it everywhere we go. To this day, even when we went to VOD and Madball the other few years ago, he likes to walk around and wander. He's a wanderer. He doesn't like to sit in his seat. And I remember, like, because I was sitting next to him, I was sitting next to Dave from Four in the Chamber. It's funny, I'm meeting with Dave on Sunday, and I remember just like worried that Mike is missing all this. And I just remember like looking at the seat, and I'm going to John. Where's your? Oh, he likes to ramble and wander around. I was like, what is he doing though? Like he's out of his seat the whole fucking time with his friends. And I'm like, I'm like worried that he's missing the show. And like I'm like looking around the arena. And I remember that's why I probably missed the Boricua's thing, because there was a couple of matches that my mind was just wondering where Mike was. You know, so it's just like I didn't get it. And then I got to be better friends with him. And then I got it. And that's his thing. He just disappears. He just walks around. He does it at baseball game. He does it everywhere he goes. Might as well not buy a seat for Mike ever.
Our seats were definitely like the one of the last rows in the arena, and the arena was sold out. At least 20,000 people.
Yeah, we were high up, but we had the whole row across. We were like 15, 18 across, in one row. I mean, we were all in that one row across.
Such a good night, man. It was legend. It was now like you're right. It became a legendary night. LOD wrestled the Godwins. The Bulldog wrestled Ken Shamrock.
That was good.
It was a good match. It was just a good card up and down. You know, it was even the.
Well, if you remember, Phil, we saw Shamrock before that, because me and you, we went to in January, February. I remember during winter weather in '97, we went to that show in Manhattan at the Manhattan Center.
Yeah,
Remember when we had to climb the steps and Freddie Joe Floyd walked past you on the steps?
Yeah, that's right.
You're like Tracy Smothers. I was like,
I saw him at the first Raw at the Manhattan
Center. That's right. Center. You told me about that.
January 10th, '93. I saw him there too. Him and his sister. What was the name? Ryan was the name. His wife, his sister.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, yeah. You know, to this day, Phil. Anytime we take we go any place that has long steps or elongated steps, me and my brother always reference you on the steps, imitating Dusty Rhodes running out of breath.
I'm wearing my shirt too. I can't believe this. I cannot believe this.
Oh, my God. We were Choppy, you would never believe, like, it was endless walking up to those steps. There was no end in sight. We didn't know, like, where do we get off here? Like, and we were all younger, much more in shape. And even we were bigger guys. We were young guys back then. We were all dying on the steps. If you looked across, every one of us was like, dude, where the fuck are we going? Like, this is like the Empire State Building climbing up these steps.
I was getting nosebleed.
I never seen anything like it in my life. Those deep steps that led up to that fucking venue. Oh my God.
I was getting dizzy. I was getting nosebleeds.
I know. We were like, where are we? We even thought that we were going somewhere that we totally are not in the right place. Like, we're just walking up to an endless area. And then, lo and behold, that's where it was. I mean, going down the steps, I just remember my brother said the same thing, because we were young guys too, and we were just totally winded by the time we got to the third stairwell. We couldn't even walk up there. It was really funny. And you would see victims on the stairs who couldn't make it. Like, who literally couldn't make it.
They would just stop and sit randomly in the middle of the steps.
Oh, my God, man. I just think that was just so funny. And that's why when we were going down the steps, coming up the steps was Freddie Joe Floyd from Tracy Smothers.
Yeah.
And we were all like, Freddie Joe Floyd, Tracy Smothers, Young Pistols. So I was like, oh my God, that was pretty funny. That was the night we saw Ken Shamrock debut, and he got interviewed in the front row, and I think he got attacked by somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good times. Man. Such good times. And the best part of it all was just every week you thought you were going to miss something if you didn't watch Raw or Nitro.
Yeah, of course.
And even if my band didn't play, I was always at the club, you know, with Kevin, John, and all those guys, and we would always just reference shit, like, randomly all the time, you know? And it was just a good time. It was just a good time to be alive.
Well, everything we had, like, we had the pay-per-views back then at the club. You know, they weren't monitoring clubs back then, finding people before they started doing that bullshit during the Attitude Era. I remember we had the pay-per-view on the night that Shawn Michaels and Sid went at it for the title in Texas. Yep. You remember that?
Yes, yes.
In the 90s, when Shawn Michaels got the belt from Sid. So we had that pay-per-view on. I can't remember the name of that, what that one was, but I just remember a bunch of pay-per-views because we did a lot of Sunday shows back then, and you played on a few of them, and we always had the pay-per-views on.
Yes, and I also played the night that it was the storm of 96. I'll never forget this.
Oh,
the blizzard. We had that blizzard.
Oh, February 96, yep.
The best was Kev books us, and this is not wrestling-related, but Kev books us to open up. Hatebreed is the headliner, and they were just getting big at the time.
Yeah.
And they drove down from Connecticut and didn't have their bass head. So my buddy Rich Fye, who's now in Caught in a Trap, lent him our bass head, and we would. And you have to understand, no one came to the club. It was a blizzard outside.
Yeah.
And there were still people making their way in, and I think that was the night that Tyson didn't Tyson bite Holyfield's ear that night.
It might have been that night. Yeah, I mean, we always had the TV on in the room that, if you remember, Phil, there was the middle of the room that separated the bar and the back room, and the pool table was there, and that was the merch area for bands. And the TV was right above there, above the merch area. So, I mean, we always had the big screen TV on, and we had anything that was on. It was a boxing pay-per-view, which was on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
Sunday was wrestling, and then during the week, we have Raw on Mondays if we had a show on Monday night. SmackDown wasn't on at that point. SmackDown didn't come on until 99, I believe, right, guys?
Yes.
Okay, so 96, 97, 98, and we had football on or whatever. But we always had shows. I mean, we had shows. It could be seven nights a week. There could be a special Tuesday show, depending who was in town or if there was a hardcore band touring that we would have. I remember that band, Phil, Turmoil, from Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
We had all these Century Media and Victory Records bands like touring through, and we would accept any show. And honestly, even with a half-ass effort, we got about 60, 70 people out on a Tuesday, Wednesday night, sometimes 100 people. So, I mean, yeah, we were like all-purpose, seven-day-a-week venue. Like I said, we were all young back then, so it wasn't like everyone was, I got to get to bed. Everyone was a 20-something and was just like, yeah, let's do it, you know? So, it's so, like I said, today, forget it. We can't get everybody to stay out on Saturday at 11 o'clock. Oh, my God. Listen, we're going on at 10 on Saturday night? I'm like, what? Yeah, why is that too early? I got to go to bed by 11:30. I'm like, oh, my God.
For two years, man, I felt like a rock star, and you did us proud, man. You did the scene proud, to be honest with you.
It was a fun time. It was everybody. I get a lot of credit for that club, but I mean, you know, and obviously I have the namesake from it, but you know, everybody, you know, it was such an important factor, from the doorman to John to Frank to the you know, all the bands who hung out there, you know, on a regular basis. I mean nobody lived in Jackson Heights per se. We all lived on the outside of Jackson Heights, Jackson Heights was like the home front.
I remember Jay, the DJ. I did a bouncing gig for you one night, and Jay drove me home. And we stopped in the White Castle on Northern Boulevard over there, right? And Chris Reed from Kid and Play was there.
What?
At like 3.
Oh, yeah. He's from Corona, I think.
He was stoned out of his face getting clam strips. It was me. And Jay lived in Greenpoint, and I lived in Bushwick. So he would drive me home on the way home.
Oh, that's cool.
Jay the DJ, man.
Who's the sound man. Well, he's the DJ, and then he became the sound man after his cousin Brian left us, and then Jay got bumped up to be the sound man, and then we had several sound men. There was him, there was Mike Stahl, who's now like a writer. He wrote a big thing on a hardcore, you might have seen it, Phil, he wrote this big article on New York Hardcore, Mike Stahl. Then there's Glenn, who's the drummer for No Redeeming and Billy Club Sandwich. And then there was Mike Galinas, who ran Roxy Studios, was our sound man.
Yeah,
so we had a bunch of great guys. We had a great crew working there, and it was funny. I had like 10 soundmen, but only one doorman. John never missed a day of work.
John never missed a day of work.
Yeah, John. You'll hear John's name, John the Doorman, from Phil and Me referenced all the time, because John was a wrestling guy, and he also never missed a show. Was never absent from the club ever, 7 days a week.
Yeah,
ever. He had perfect attendance.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And that wasn't even his main job. That was like a
no. It wasn't even his main job.
It's a side hustle. It was a side hustle.
It wasn't even his main job. He'd go home at 4 a.m. from the club, and then he was an office worker for Wallbaum's at the time, and then he'd have to be there for like produce load-in at 6 a.m. and sleep in his car, and then he'd go back to Castle. That guy's, and he's still, to this day, a workhorse in his mid-40s.
John, to this day. He's good people, man.
Good people. He still works with me. I still work with John.
Just a wonderful, wonderful crew to be around. It was, I felt like a rock star. It was the best couple of years of my life, man. I'll never forget it.
Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, today, I'm always bitching about the same thing because it's just not the same, and there's just not even the camaraderie that there used to be, you know?
Well, listen, before we let you go, I want you to do me a solid, man. I know your brother Mark is getting shut down back together for a big show in October. I heard they're playing in Tompkins Square Park. I'm beyond thrilled. I want to go. I want to try to make
it. Oh, you should definitely go. It's October. It's Sunday, October 1st. At Tompkins Square Park, it's shut down. They haven't played New York in years since 2010. And they're co-headlining with Warzone. Now you can say, how's Warzone playing since Rabies died years ago? But they're doing a bunch of special guest big-time singers from the hardcore scene. We're going to be filling in, doing Rabies spot in Warzone. So it's Warzone shut down. It's a free show at Tompkins Square Park. I'm sure it's going to be packed to the fucking rafters. It's done by Black and Blue Productions. It's a one-time only shutdown. It's not doing any other thing. My brother's flying in Friday and leaving Monday. That's why he would have did another show in Queens or Manhattan or Long Island. I mean, Brooklyn or Long Island, but just it's a one-shot deal. So, you know, that's pretty much what's going to happen with that. But that's on October 1st. It's ironic because I got to go to a shutdown show in the afternoon. I'm just going as a fan. Then I got to work a Winger show at night. So that's I'm working with Kip Winger that night in New York, actually.
But just let Mark know that I'm stoked. You know, I'm a big Shutdown fan. We got to play with them.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm going to talk. I mean, I hope to see a ton of people there who used to come out back in the day who haven't gone to a show in a long time. So it'll be great to see you. And I'll talk to you before then, and we'll try and meet up.
Yeah, we'll definitely try to meet up. And let John know. Let Draper know. I want to get him on the show as well. I was supposed to get him on tonight, but I guess it didn't work out. But I want to get him on the show, too, and just to talk some old school wrestling with me, too. Maybe
they'll be there, and yeah, he'll definitely come on. I know he wrote something to me before about it, that I was going on the show. I told him I was going on, and I think he had some family stuff going on because his stepkids were away, and they're coming back now because they got to start school next week. So yeah. I think he just had some family time stuff. But he'll be at the show, too, on the 1st. Mike will be there, my other brother. Everyone's going to be at that show, and dare I say, all the Queens guys will be there.
Yeah.
So. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I want to introduce Choppy to the greatest scene, the greatest music scene of all time.
Sounds good.
Choppy, what were you, like 10 years old back then? Like,
I was probably like 13 or 14 at that time.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So I want to introduce Choppy to some good music.
Sounds good.
And I want to educate him as I go along here.
Well, Choppy, being a younger guy, then how did you, old school wrestling, how did you get so educated in old school wrestling?
Well, what happened was I started watching wrestling when I was 3 years old. It was in 87. I saw Jake the Snake against some like local jobber on TV, and I was mesmerized by it. I was like, this is what I want to watch. This is all I care about. So as the years progressed, I didn't watch WCW because all I had was WWF. Mm-hmm. So as the years progressed, I was like, man, I wish I had watched WCW as well. So I backtracked, and I started, you know, tape trading, just like Phil did. And that's the only way I could watch the old stuff, you know?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, man, it's great. I love it.
So
I love all the old stuff.
Yeah, he's been my squire. I've been training him well, Kev. He's my
pal. I was going to say, yeah, how did you two guys even get together? Because I didn't even realize you wanted to give me the Reader's Digest version. How did you guys wind up as a team?
Real quick, he was a fan of your show. You guys name-dropped me a few times. And he lived locally, and he lived on Staten Island where I lived, and he saw me at a show, went to an indie show, and he approached me. He said, yo, man, I'm a big fan of the show, and then a couple, we became really good friends. Our wives hang out together now. And then about a year ago, almost a year ago, I was in between co-hosts, and he mentioned to me, like, inadvertently, like, listen, if you need help, like, with the show or anything, let me know. And I thought that, like, maybe with, like, material. I didn't mean it for him to come on the show. it just worked out that we had good chemistry, and he needs a good kid. So I see him, a lot of me in him. So it worked out well. It really did. So now we're like family. It's a good vibe we have going on. So I'm glad he came aboard.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. You know, I'm glad to see you doing stuff, Phil, with the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Like I said, I've checked out a bunch of shows. I'll continue to support the show, shout you guys out. And, you know, anything we can do on DTKC, always let us know. You guys are friends of the show for life. So
yeah, DT doesn't return a lot of messages. So you just let them know that... I'm really appreciative of what you guys did for me. I really did. You guys gave me a lot of fans, and you know.
Oh, that's okay. He doesn't return my messages.
but half
the time I don't know what's going on until day of shows.
He's that kind of guy. But he is a good dude. You know, a lot of people say some negative shit about him, but he really is behind the scenes. And if you know him, he's a good dude.
So. Oh, yeah. No, like I said, I mean, it's all like just like in wrestling. Everybody's like a character, you know, and you got to kind of get acclimated to everybody's ways of doing things. And just like, everybody I run into, there's so many podcasters now. I'm sure you guys noticed it, too.
Of course.
It's become like tremendous. You know, I go on and just look at YouTube clips and stuff, and I'll just see like 10 new shows that I've never seen before. And I give everybody a chance. I used to like kind of be like an asshole, but I don't want to listen to anybody else's podcast. But now I try and listen to a bunch of different stuff. There's some really good ones out there. I'm talking about not the wrestling JJ Dillon or X-Pac. I mean, my God, everyone's got a podcast now.
Right, exactly.
But there's a lot of like tandems and teams and this one and that one. You know, it's funny though. I don't see an all. I still don't. And I did this on our Patreon, is that I have a female co-host named Trez on one of our Patreon shows, because I never saw any female co-hosts, and I never seen any all-female run wrestling podcasts. I decided to do that. Now I see other people having female co-hosts. So.
There was one out of Canada with two chicks out of Montreal, Corey and I forgot the other chick's name, but they were good for... They were... Mish knew them. Mish was helping them out for a while.
Okay.
They were really good, but they had split up, and Corey started a family, and you know that. But they were pretty good, though. So, I mean... Okay.
I'm willing to listen to all. I mean, like I said, some are good. Some people just, you know, do a podcast. I think the one that's separate, I think the people who are well-rounded, knowledgeable fans are, but then there's a podcast, I don't know if you guys ever heard it, where it's two guys just sitting in the living room just ripping apart wrestling. Have you guys ever heard that?
There's a few.
It's kind of like, I guess it's a work in a way, but it's basically them just making fun of everybody and putting every wrestler down. I can't remember the name of it, but I was actually cracking up when they were talking about Finn Balor and just ripping him a new asshole. It was pretty funny.
Well, why don't you plug your stuff before we let you go and start wrapping this up? You know, guys got a lot of stuff going on with the Patreon and stuff, so why don't you plug that?
Oh, yeah. Well, first, of course, the flagship show is on every Monday, the Don Tony Kevin Castle Show, almost in our 10th year now. Monday nights at 11:15, right after Raw. Like I said, live every week. I just did the show for the first time myself, solo, for the first time in 10 years.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was good.
That was fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks. I know. I like I said, I got asked to do that, not even on a day's notice, and it was cool though. And then that's the funny part. So I'm like, how did you not host a show? But I'm like, I just never did. I always had Mish, or I had another guy, or you came on, Phil, or
yeah.
We had Joey or John. There was always a backup plan. So this is the first time that happened, and yeah, I'll gladly do it again. It worked out well. But it's weird not having a partner on a show that's based on a two-man team. But then we have the Patreon shows, which are for our Patreon people. Just go to Patreon, Don Tony Kevin Castle. You get three different Patreon shows for your buck. $5 is the tier and up. You get the Breakfast Soup with Don Tony and Anthony Missionary Thomas from Wrestling Soup. They do a show on Wednesday, and I do two shows. I do Tuesday nights with me and Trez, who's a female co-host, and we do the Dark Chronicles, and we talk about everything from, like, you know, almost like paranormal stuff to movie reviews, so in wrestling, of course, too. And we do SmackDown review, and then on Thursdays I do the Castle Chronicles, which is just me talking about everything and anything. I mean, just all sorts of topics. Sometimes wrestling is like the last thing we talk about, but it's fun doing it. You know, and the Patreon people are really loyal, and they're the ones who make their donations and stuff, because now that's what this is all about. Because as you know, YouTube has completely destroyed any revenue or for even people to even pay. Yeah. We were never a YouTube channel anyway, but TV Tracks would put our clips up and stuff. So we were always, we always had another outlet to get finances for our show. But the Patreon is the way to go now. Without that, I don't know that we would be a subscription show on Monday if we didn't have Patreon. So thank God for the Patreon people who donate and give what they can, or we would have to be a pay show. It would just be no choice. The expenses to run a show like we do is too much, and it wouldn't be fair to DT or to myself. You know what I mean?
Well, you guys do us justice, and we appreciate you guys doing all your great podcasting every week. Same to you guys, man.
It's like I said, I'd like to see other people do well too. I think there's more than enough room, especially for different. You guys have a different theme thing going on, which is great, very unique. I don't see. You would think that there'd be a ton of throwback shows, and actually, honestly, besides you guys, I couldn't find any. Maybe you guys know of some. I didn't see any.
There's a few. There's a two guys out of the Midwest that I like, and there's a couple of guys in Australia that do. They got one called Butts in the Seats. They call themselves. And they do more like a YouTube, like a review online. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I just mine is from the current to the way back. It's a mixed bag. I give the kids my opinion. Choppy and I give our opinions of the current shit, and then we pick a topic from yesteryear, and we knock it out of the park. That's what we do. And I think that makes the kids happy. They get an education, and then they get our opinions about the they hear us piss and moan about the current stuff. So.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's when I tell people just get frustrated wrestling, go on. You guys have the luxury that me and you, Phil, didn't have back in the 90s. Because even though we were on America Online and we can go to the hardcore website, there wasn't anything for us. You know, no. You go to maybe a wrestling thing and do a little chat with people.
Yeah.
But there was nothing like there is today with in the 90s, like YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. There's nothing like that, especially YouTube. I mean, you told me 20 years ago that I could go on YouTube and watch Lethal Larry Cameron clips in Calgary in 1988. I'd be like, how the fuck am I going to see that? Well, you got to order it. You know what I mean? So, talk about if we would have known all we know now, Phil, everything we can go. Right now, I can get off the show with you and go watch a full, nights of world-class stuff from 1987.
Yep,
exactly.
And not have to fucking pay for it. You know what I mean? And not have to go through videotapes and pop VHS and DVDs and find it, order it. It's good and bad too. You save a lot of money now because you get this stuff on YouTube. You don't have to, but some people are collectors and they buy this stuff.
Yeah.
Because I have like 5,000 VHS tapes that are rendered useless at this point.
Exactly.
So, I don't have a VCR anymore. I couldn't even watch them. They're all just in my closet stacked to the top. But there's some real classic stuff on there. But quite honestly, I can find all the clips on YouTube of everything I got on those tapes.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Kev, listen, from the bottom of our heart, we really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thank you so much, my friend.
No problem, guys. Thank you very much for having me, and good luck with the podcast in the future. Anything we can do for you guys, let us know. And, Phil, I would definitely talk to you before October 1st, and we'll plan to meet up.
Yeah, I would definitely see you in October. I'm going to bring Choppy with me, and we'll get
to that. I'm looking forward to meeting you, too. That'll be a great day. We'll make it a point to meet a little earlier before the show starts. It's going to be chaotic over there. Maybe we can meet a block away, get something to eat, and go to the show together.
I would appreciate that, because I really want to catch up and say hello and give you a nice hug and a handshake.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
Well, that was 5 years in the making.
That was fantastic.
Listen, and I'm not saying this because he's my friend. I'm saying it because it's probably, besides doing shit with the Wizards and besides hooking up with you and Dave and Scott, that was probably the best thing I can ever do. Kevin was one of the reasons why I do this podcast. He's the reason why he inspired me, him and Anthony inspired me to do the show. And I'm sure that they inspired a ton of fucking podcasts now, like Wrestling Soup included.
Of course.
So for him to take time out of his busy schedule to come on and hang out with us on a Friday night.
It's tough, man, because he has a demanding job. So.
Yeah, he's a constant promoter. That's his hustle.
God bless him for coming on.
That's his hustle. So Kev, again, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. And talking about SummerSlam 97. Dude.
He's a wealth of knowledge, man, when it comes to wrestling, bro.
We can break down. We could make two or three episodes out of what he talked about.
Yeah, tonight. Of course.
God,
it was such a great to have him on, I swear to God.
So, and we had some activity in the chat room, so we appreciate that.
Thank you, guys.
So, Nick German, I see Nick German suplexing there. David, the minivan guy was in there. Dan, there's Dan, Dan and Dave. What the hell is the name?
Minivan was Dave, and then we have David Robert on as well.
So,
thank you guys.
Yeah, really. And I didn't know that Macho Man came out to Fame.
I didn't know that either. See, again, a wealth of knowledge. This guy is like, you're the messiah of memories, but this guy is the wealth of knowledge. I don't know how he does it. Like, he remembers everything. Oh, the, oh, so wait a minute. David Robert. Okay, all right.
Oh, oh, okay, okay.
So you must have changed your handle.
Well, it's not, it's not, it's kayfabe, kayfabe, kayfabe. Yeah.
Sorry. they're
two people, two different people.
Yeah, of course. That's,
we'll keep it kayfabe. That's what we do here on Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We,
no government names.
We preserve the kayfabe. So, thank you everybody in the chat room tonight for hanging out with us. Mr. X, I know you're listening. I'll get a text from you later. You know I love you, buddy. Listen, so now we have to play Fame. So
play it.
So I have to play Fame. Where's my...
I can't believe Macho Man will come out to this.
Yeah, exactly.
Insane!
So, anyway, I want to thank everybody in the chat room. I want to thank everybody tuning in, social media. Speaking of social media, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, at TBuckleTBacks, at Choppy...
2984.
You want to email us, it's TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. We have shirts, go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. Buy a shirt, join the Facebook page. We're very active on social media, we'll get back to you.
Absolutely.
We don't ignore anybody.
Unless you're...
Rage.
Rage or Nick German?
No.
I'm joking. Nick, I love you.
We'll see Nick next week, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It's going to be great.
So, very excited to see Nick. Anyway, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com, RantEmRadio.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Go to Midnight Jury's website, WLW Studios. Support those guys.
Yeah, please. Those guys are great.
Yeah. Best sushi contest ever. That's true. That's true. That's true.
By the way, Nick, when you drive up here, please be careful driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't rush. There's no reason to rush.
Exactly.
Wow, I still can't believe Macho Man walked out to this. And so, this.
I know. Anyway, so on behalf of my tag team partner, Choppy, I am the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, bidding you adieu, reminding you, please, 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 take care of yourselves, each other, avoid the clap, don't get arrested, be kind to animals, say hi to your mom once in a while. Don't say the N-word unless you're Tony C.
Yeah.
Or Honesta, mm-hmm. Right? And that's pretty much it, man. We're out of here, right?
Yeah.
Next week, same bad time, same bad channel?
Yes.
All right. I'm going home. You going home?
Yeah.
All right. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.